You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. I wanted my cake and eat it too. I wanted it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of Bruce Lee of Bruce Inc. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Woo! Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get, it was bittersweet. It was like winning a used me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm acting weirder than you think, cause
I'm friends with the monster.
Good Monday morning to you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Yeah, Thanksgiving week. How about that? Pretty cool. Thanksgiving always the, I don't know, in my opinion, one of the coolest weeks of the year. You know what? I say that, and then I'll also say in the same breath, and sometimes one of the hardest weeks of the year, depending on how life is rotating for you. I think when you're young and you grow up and the world is full of hope, and if you grow up like that, then it's a wonderful, wonderful week with wonderful traditions and it's all good. Thanksgiving, all good. And then if as you get older, and maybe life's not like that anymore, life changes for a lot of people. And your family isn't the same. You're not the same. So so it can be both of those things. So be mindful of that as you go through your week and reach out to people who may be struggling because they need it. They certainly need it. The my perspective on Thanksgiving has changed since reinforced since starting to do this program. And and, you know, it's almost like the tale of two cities, the Thanksgiving. And on one side you have this wonderful family holiday. On the other side you have this this wonderful family holiday that people don't participate in and miss it tremendously. And so, anyway, if you have a chance to invite somebody that might be alone, that's probably not a bad thing to do. Won't completely screw up your Thanksgiving, I don't think. So think about it, think about it, think about it. Let's see, what's going on? Oh, I gave my speech on Friday night. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I'll tell you about that. Ubaldi's going to join us. Gunnar will join us this morning. We'll talk about some current events. And I've got it, and then I'll tell you what we're going to do this week. Jennifer Carrazzo is going to join us. She a Gold Star widow. I think that's the appropriate way to say that. So she'll join us. And she's had, first of all, talk to her about things that if you know Gold Star families, maybe they'd appreciate. But she's the CEO of a foundation she founded after her husband, who was a helicopter pilot, Mario Carrazzo, was killed in Afghanistan, and it's called the Sugar Bear Foundation. Sugar Bear was his call sign. So we'll talk to her about those things, get her take on the holidays, and then they have some upcoming stuff. So, you know, as I don't know, how would I say this, as kind of life changes for a lot of people in terms of what charities they support and things like that. Gold Star families are an awful good one to support because the price that they pay lasts forever. So anyway, we'll get Jennifer on this week and we'll talk to her. So, and then we'll also talk to Ken Rogers. We'll finally catch up with Ken post the Vietnam War series on PBS. Ken is a documentary maker, or rather has turned into one, after his wife suggested that they record the memories of all of his buddies that were at Khe Sanh. And so you have a guy who retired who now is a documentary filmmaker. So I wanted to get Ken's, and if you haven't seen his documentary, Bravo, Uncommon, or Common Men, Uncommon Valor, you should check it out. Get it for yourself for Christmas. Yeah, just do a search on it. Bravo, exclamation mark, I think is how they wrote it. Common Men, Uncommon Valor. And it's awesome, honestly. It's a riveting story of their time at Khe Sanh. So he'll join us on Wednesday. And again, if you're doing Thanksgiving, right, the Allmarine Radio head chef gave you a timeline on Friday, right? The birds should start thawing today, thaws today and tomorrow, right? Then goes into the brine on Tuesday night, comes out Wednesday night, all ready to go for game day on Thursday. So don't be afraid to be a doting spouse and say, you know, honey, let me help you a little bit here. And then the side dishes, get those prepared the next couple days, so all you're doing is heating them up. That's right. The cook gets the party, too. That's right. So, anyway, I hope you had a good weekend. I did. My weekend was awesome. I'll tell you about it. But before I do that, United States Marine Corps band makes it official on a Monday morning. The, I had a great weekend. My, Patrick was, Patrick's home and, celebrated his birthday last night, but, just having him around's good. But the event on, Friday night, the birthday ball of the Knight Riders, VMM 164, which, is the descendant from HMM 164, which fought in every battle, every major battle. In Vietnam from about 66 to 69, and there were big ones. And they're all a part of their illustrious record. So being with them was awesome. And I'm not saying it because they invited me to speak. I'm saying it because they're good. They're a good unit. And you can tell, Gunner and I have talked about this, but, we talked about it in content of, gunner doing a lot of battlefield circulation. So as a regimental gunner, he goes out with a regimental commander and they tour the planet. How you doing? Check their pulse, see how they're living. What can I do for you? How do I help you? It's what regimental commanders and leaders at different levels do, right? So Gunner would tag along in that thing, and, he'd just go and talk to Marines, see how things are going, and what makes sense, what doesn't make sense to them, blah, 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 blah. So in the context of that conversation, he has always said, you can tell within a few minutes from getting out of the trucks what kind of unit you have. It's right, the way Marines greet you, general cleanliness, the way they wear their uniform, just the whole attitude. You can tell if it's well led. Well, I have to tell you that 164 is well led. The Marines were good, and I'll tell you a quick story, and I'll give you a little anecdote about what a great evening it was. So, good morning to you. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official, and happy Thanksgiving as we transition from the Marine Corps birthday to Thanksgiving.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Thanksgiving night, currently sunny in 43 in Quantico, sunny in 48 Camp Lejeune, down in Texas, dropped off, clouds at 49 in Texas, Montana heat wave, oh, this snow's going to stay with us forever, 48 degrees under mostly cloudy skies, 29 Palms is cold. Sunny and 45, Pendleton, straight up cold. Cloudy and 42, Okinawa, where they just secured everybody's liberty due to a fatal car crash between a Marine and a Japanese civilian that killed the civilian. Marine had 3 times the legal limit of alcohol in his system. But I have to check and see what the legal limit is. What does that mean? You know, hell, I mean, in Japan, that could be like a .06, which in most states in the United States won't even get you drunk, won't even get you a DUI. So, anyway, Well, it might get you DUI. It wouldn't get you DWI. Yeah, the language of intoxicated driving. The Okinawa, cloudy, dark, and 66. In Raqqa, cloudy, dark, 64. Marsha, cloudy, dark, 55. Marsha continues to cool as it tries to simulate that it's actually 29 palms. Except they don't have all the poppy growing up in the Yucca Valley up there. All right, let me tell you what happened to me on Friday night. So I'm the guest speaker at the birthday ball of the Knight Riders. It's being held at the Pala Resort and Spa north of Escondido. So you go north of Escondido on the 15 where it crosses the 76. You get off there and you head east inland and all of a sudden, boom, big, beautiful casino. And so get there and go up and change. I thought I forgot my shoes, but I didn't. So I wear a dark suit. And my miniature medals. Yeah. So anyway, and then my son Patrick was going to meet me there after he got off work at Camp Pendleton. So he showed up. So that was cool. Patrick just got home. It'll be a week tomorrow. So, I'm going to go give a speech and your son's there. That way you can pick on him a little bit too. So, which I did. But then the reason I got invited was their sergeant major used to work for me. And so, Sergeant Major Mario Aguero. So, he's an awesome Sergeant Major. When we were, we met at 1st Marine Headquarters Group. So it's essentially a regimental headquarters that has responsibility for the command element of the MEF in addition to 5 battalions. Intel Battalion, Radio Battalion, 9th Com, Anglico, and Law Enforcement Battalion. So all those separate battalions are consolidated under the MEF headquarters group, and then the cherry on top, all the colonels and master gunnery sergeants and master sergeants and every other cat that won't be herded in the MEF command element. Yeah, so you get to run the operations for that. So anyway, we're a non-deploying headquarters element, at least in theory, although they have deployed, most recently to Afghanistan. So what happens? The manpower people decide that we're going to park in the S3 shop, which has about a dozen Marines on its TO, up to about, maybe about 20. We're going to park guys headed for Wounded War Battalion, or Marines headed for med boards and out there to create to free line numbers and staffing and all that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of guys that are physically damaged, and then some that are mentally damaged, some that are physically and mentally damaged. And Sergeant Major was a gunny at the time, and that required a lot of love to do that. And so he was great at it. These guys were broken by war, multiple combat deployments, being wounded, divorce, financial issue, just all the stuff that goes with goes with going to war, the reality of going to war, and coming home and she wants a divorce and there's no money left. Now add that little cherry on top to to being wounded and the anger that you have inside of you, and it's tough. So, but long story short, he was awesome in it. So he invited me to speak. The highlight of it, along with just being with them, is, as I said, you walk in and you can feel their enthusiasm, and I think happiness is the wrong word. So I'm standing there, And I was talking, guys would come up and introduce themselves to me and, you know, say welcome. So I'd stand there and they'd ask me questions about me and we're talking. So I say, I'd ask them, is this a good unit? Every single one of them said, essentially, no, it's not a good unit. It's a really, really good unit. Which you don't hear very often. But more than them saying that was you could feel it, right? When you're around good units, you can feel it. And so, that was very cool. It was very cool. And so you start to see them interact and blah, 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 blah. And you're excited that you're with them. And then, so anyway, that's the setting. So we do the ceremony. And, you know, you're trying to remember what you're supposed to do and trying not to screw it up and blah, blah, all of that. And so, I didn't screw anything up in a major way. So I was proud of that. And after that, the commanding officer spoke and I spoke after he did. So my message was twofold. One, what makes the Marine Corps special? And the answer to that is you make the Marine Corps special. And then transitioned that into why it's important to keep your honor clean. And it's important to keep your honor clean. It sounds hokey, but it's really important because for the rest of your life, you'll live with what you did. And in an aviation organization where every day is a go day, because aircraft go up in the air, and you're responsible for them, not only them, but the lives that sit in the back of those aircraft. So the Osprey that VMM 164 is responsible for, every day, is a go day for you guys. So, last part of it was, don't be afraid to fight. What? And so, after, you'll live with it, what you do in life echoes in eternity. After that, it was the lessons from, our kind of research into Mili. And that is if Mili, and all these other incidents that, we take a look at here on All Marine Radio, and that is this. If one person says, I'm not doing that, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And so when people come to you and they want you to do things that you know you're not supposed to do, don't do them. And if they push, ask them if they want to fight. And if they want to fight, fight them. I said, you have to fight to make the Marine Corps a better place. And ultimately, just like picking up somebody's keys off a bar, do you think that Gunnery Sergeant Felix at some point maybe would reach out and thank the person who said, hey, man, you need to lay off that kid. Stop calling him a terrorist. Stop doing that. Hey, shut up, McNamara. I'm not shutting up, Gunny. So either we can settle it between you and me. If you want to do that, I'm good with it. We can settle it right here. But I'm not having this anymore. I said, so if you have to fight, then fight. What do you think is going to happen? I pointed to the commanding officer. When you fight somebody, And they do the initial interviews and take statements for that. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to read your statement and they're going to look at you and say, you go away. you did the right thing. And so I gave a couple different instances of that, and how the Marine Corps needs to change. That it's got to get comfortable fighting, especially people that are doing the right thing. Now, I'm not sure. So then I, at the end of it, I said, now, when there's a big up, I said, looked at the Sergeant Major and CO. I said, hey, look, I'm sorry. When there's a big uptake in fighting in your squadron, you know where to blame it. And they both laughed and gave the thumbs up. So that was the speech. Let me tell you what the highlight was, though. At the start of the speech, I said, are there any Vietnam veterans here? And way in the back, now you're in a ballroom at a casino, right? So it's got a stage, it's got a dance floor, it's got tables on the dance floor, around the dance floor, right? And then it's got the kind of booths that you see typical of a kind of a casino venue. It has booths and tables in the rest of the ballroom. So that's the configuration. Way in the back, I see this hand go up. And so I say, could you please stand up? And this man is in his 70s, got a white beard, white hair. And I think his name was KJ, goes by his initials. So he stands up, and I said, you know, what I typically say in these situations, which is, on behalf of everybody here, thank you for what you went through, because of what you went through, we can come to a place like this, we can be in uniform, and people that disagree with the wars that we're fighting or whatever, never say anything to us. The only thing that happens to us is people kiss our ass and tell us how great we are and buy us drinks and buy us food. And we know that you didn't get treated like that. And it's hard for us to imagine the war that you fought in where 58,000 people were killed, Americans were killed. And you got, when you came home, you got told to take your uniform off, grow your hair, and don't talk about it. You know, it's pretty astounding when you hear that. So, on behalf of all of us, thank you. Okay, now, here's where it gets better. The Marines, they stand up and they give him a standing ovation. Yeah. And so he's standing there. And, I mean, he's far away from me, so I couldn't see. And he comes up to me after the whole thing's over. He comes up and grabs my arm with both hands. And he says, tonight's one of the greatest nights of my life. Thank you. And I said, for what? And he said, nobody has ever thanked me for anything that I did in Vietnam. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And he wouldn't let go of my arm. He would not let go of my arm. So Patrick was standing next to me when this happened, and I looked at Patrick and I said, you know what? If it wasn't already a good enough night, and it was, just went off the hook status. And so I, very, very cool Friday night, which started the weekend. It was fun. We celebrated Patrick's birthday last night, and as a family, so that was cool. But so I had an awesome weekend. I had an awesome weekend, and the on the way home, driving home, his reaction and to my words, but best of all, and like I said, good units, they know what to do. Yeah, those Marines all stood up and gave him a standing ovation. And he was so emotional afterwards. I've never, ever been honored for anything I ever did. I was with the 82nd Airborne in Vietnam. And it's been hard for me all these years. And to think that you all appreciate what we did blows my mind. And, you know, again, Bob Nielsen has said that, this on the program. You know, that the, he said this on the program in terms of when he goes to Bethesda or Walter Reed and they find out that he's a Vietnam veteran, the attention that he gets that he's uncomfortable with. And I say, you know, why? It's pretty natural for us to want to talk to you, yes or no? And he'll, Mac, you don't get it. We didn't talk about this. Rah. Anyway, we'll take a break. John Ubaldi's going to join us next, and we'll talk some current events as we get going on this short week, Thanksgiving week. Again, make sure if you're hosting Thanksgiving, you got your timeline squared away so that your better half, who might be cooking, or you might be cooking, you get to party too. So, yeah, big event today, thaw the bird. If it's already thawed, start on the side dishes. Make it easy. Have a good time. The cook gets the party too. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. BattleMug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Find you Baldy's phone number.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air. Welcome to All Marine Radio.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be on All Marine Radio.
You know, that sounds good. That sounds good. The Master Gunnery Sergeant John Ubaldi joins me. The went to an awesome Marine Corps ball on Friday night and was the speaker there. Never had done that before. Very, very cool when you're the guest of honor. And one of my sons was there. That was cool. And then a Vietnam veteran. You know how you – I was talking about this before, but you know how long does it take you when you walk in and you're walking around a unit to kind of sense that they're good? How long does it take you to figure that out?
I would say just right away.
And how do you know?
It's just the interaction you have with the Marines, especially depends what rank you are. Does someone greet you at the as you walk in, especially when you're new?
Right.
And if you're a senior Marine, what is the kind of respect level that they have? You can tell that right away what kind of unit you have.
It's funny that everybody says the same thing, and I've never discussed that, but everybody says the same thing, that it's instantaneous. The other problem with balls these days is when you have them at a casino, and then all the ceremonies are over and dinner's over and the music starts, where do the Marines go? Do they stay and hang out?
They go back. Oh, heck no. They bolt for the casinos and have some fun.
Okay, what would you tell me if the majority of the Marines hung out and danced and whatnot?
I would say that's a good unit because that shows pride in the unit and that shows pride in each other.
Right, that they enjoy each other, right?
They enjoy each other and they want it. Because the Marine Corps ball is probably the chance for Marine leadership to have a more informal relationship with their fellow Marines. And if all the Marines stay, that shows a good unit.
Yeah, and so they stay. Now, I was invited because, well, do you remember Gunny Aguero?
Yeah, I think so. I bet they sound familiar.
He was the ops chief before you got there?
Okay, yeah, I remember. I remember that.
He's an awesome guy, right? He's now
really good guy.
Yeah, he's now Sergeant Major. And so that's how I got invited. And so let me tell you, it's no wonder that he would have a squared away unit. But it was awesome. Anyway, the part of the story that I wanted to share with you is, typical when I speak is I'll ask if there are any Vietnam veterans there. And one guy way in the back stuck his hand up, and I said, "Would you stand up?" And so I thanked him, right? And then the whole room stood up and gave a standing ovation, and he got very emotional about it. Afterwards, he comes up to me, and he puts like the hammer of deathlock on with both of his hands on my arm, and he wouldn't let go for like 10 minutes. I finally said, "Yo, KJ, like, let go of my arm, man. I need that thing." And no, he said, "This is one of the greatest nights of my life. I've never been thanked by anybody." Yeah. So it's very, 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 very cool. And it's cool.
Well, see, for me, when I've spoken out in certain, rallies and events, I always thank the Vietnam vet because when we got back from Iraq and Afghanistan, everybody thanked us for our service, and we got all this adulation from the country and everything. They never did. And because of what they went through, they made sure that would never happen again. So I always thank them for making sure our lives were much easier than what they experienced.
So that's what I did on Friday. So very, very cool stuff. The Knight Riders, formerly HMM 164, currently BMM 164. So I also did a little intelligence collection. I wanted to ask Osprey pilots. I got told by an Osprey pilot that, "Oh, no, we could do everything the 46 did. And last night, on Friday night, I was asking him, because let me tell you, I'm not a fan of the Osprey. In my opinion, it's a one trick pony. Okay, it is a long its strong suit is over the horizon, right? Air to air refueling, and you can touch places that they don't think you can touch, which is cool, right? Which is a great capability because you don't have to close on any place in order to get people in to do bad things to bad people. So that's good. Where what we lost in the Marine Corps is the ability of the CH-46 to kind of fly nap of the earth, haul an ass, and then flare real quick, and then put a squad into an LZ, and then be off the deck in 45 seconds, maybe get into the air 10 feet, drop their nose a little bit, and then bank and get the hell out of there. The 46 and the Huey, the Cobra, they can all do that. The Osprey can't do that. But the guy I asked said, "Oh, yeah, we can do that. We're more powerful. We're more this." But they don't transition very well. And the three pilots I said, yes, they said, "Yeah, we can't do that. We just got that, rapid insert and extraction into our mission statements. But, yeah, that dog doesn't hunt. It doesn't transition like that." So.
Well, considering the amount of money that went into that, I mean, I was a junior in high school in 1981 when they first proposed it. I think it just hit the operating forces probably about, what, 2009, 2008. I mean, they pumped a lot of billions into that aircraft. And it's bad that it can only do one thing.
Well, it can do, you know, it can do, you know, a number of things, but its strong suit is not medium lift. And so the Marine Corps has got a hole in its medium lift mission. And it's not a good hole.
Did you ask the pilot, and I know this answer, what's its ability of the Osprey to do some of the logistics lift from the 46?
No. No.
Because that was the other thing. That was an LSB. We used to do a logistics lift with the 46s, and they were able to do that. The heavy lift came from the 53s, so I was just curious, what's the ability of the Osprey to supplement what the 46s used to do?
The one of the things he talked about relative to even medium lift, external, we're talking about external lift, right? So things that you sling underneath the airframe. He said, you know, those counter rotating blades, what they do is, you know, it doesn't matter what the howitzer is doing down below you, okay? You know, however, when you have a single rotating, you know, rotors, then he said the physics of it, that thing will start moving the same direction, and it'll cause you problems. So I would have to have somebody come on to talk sophisticated aerodynamics with me. But you know, in Afghanistan, relative to infantry stuff, we you know, what you would like to do is when you make contact, you have a CH-46 shut down in a firm base somewhere, right? You load a squad of Marines on, and you drop those guys in, you know, you drop those guys in behind the guys who you're chasing, and you yoke them up, and you eliminate them from the battlefield instead of allowing them to, instead of trying to chase them on foot, chase them with drones, right? And, you know, you and then they get away. So it would have come in awfully handy if we had something like that, but as we were talking, we don't have that. We don't have that. And I would submit to you that medium lift into a contested LZ, the Marine Corps can't do. They would have to offset insert you, and then you would have to go to that LZ. You would have to go to that area on foot. So
yeah, that could be problematic for the next big conflict the U.S. gets itself in.
Right. No, I mean, again, and it does good stuff. It does great stuff. It does unique stuff. The special operators love it, right? But if you have to, if it's a contested LZ, and, you know, like many were in Vietnam, they were not cold LZs. You were going to get some element of shooting there. The Osprey is a bit of a China doll. It's a bit of a China doll.
That's going to be interesting, though, because eventually the next conflict, you can't judge what the next conflict's going to look like or where it's going to be.
Well, let me tell you one thing. It better not involve any hurry-up, medium, insert-extract capability, because we don't got it.
And that's going to be the challenge for the Marine Corps, because they pumped billions into that aircraft. I mean, I think it was attuned to, I mean, don't quote me on it, about $9 billion for that aircraft.
Yeah. Oh, no. And it's a favorite. It looks cool as hell, right? The problem is when you got to get in and out quick, it can't do it.
Well, what looks cool in front of the lawmakers doesn't look cool for combat troops trying to get in and out.
You're right. And there's so you'd rather be a lawmaker than a Marine in the back of an Osprey going in and out.
Well, Mike, how many times have they proposed certain things that cost billions that inadvertently didn't work? I mean, the Army had the Comanche. We had our amphibious fighting vehicle. They pumped billions into it, and now we got to start from scratch, and we just don't have that kind of money anymore.
Yeah, if you ever want to hear, like, some of my other guests just go off, ask them about the Marine Corps procurement process. That we have a process that's welded in the 50s, and it lends itself to contractors and making a lot of money. What it doesn't, you know, support is, for instance, you know, the M16, this is followed on by the M4, that's 1950s technology. Now, we've done a whole bunch of stuff to it, but you're still talking about 1950s technology relative to our service rifle. And so, again, the way technology changes, it's they would tell you that the single thing that needs to be reformed in the Department of Defense more than anything else is the way we procure, because it is broken.
But see, Mike, that's just not the Department of Defense, because I've been to certain events out here in Tampa when we talk about tax reform, and one of the questions came up, will that blow, how do you prevent that from blowing a hole in the debt? And the one thing that nobody talks about, Republicans or Democrats, is how to reform, not cut government spending, but how to reform government spending. I mean, there was an agency, and I wish I could remember the agency, they just upgraded its operating system to Windows 95. What the hell is that? I mean, the military sees it, all the other civilian agencies see the same thing. Look at the Affordable Care Act website. When it collapsed, Google, which was a big supporter of the president, this was President Obama, sent its tech wizards to help out, and they were stunned. Their mouths just dropped. They're like, you guys did what? And they spent the tune of $1 billion on a website that barely works.
Oh, God, do you remember that?
Yeah, there's a book called America's Poison Pill written by a guy named Stephen Brill. He commented in this book, and it's just like, the government is great at getting companies who knew how to get through the minutiae of government contracting, and they know how to get people who know how to push that thing through. They don't know how anybody that knows how to get things done. And that's why we got a $20 trillion debt. It just needs to be reformed, and I just don't see that being reformed anytime soon.
Email. Matt, could you see the article about everybody in Okinawa getting their liberty secured? I did. John, do you remember what is the legal limit in terms of what is the legal limit in Japan? Do you remember that?
For drinking?
In terms of blood alcohol content.
I don't know what the blood alcohol content is. I thought it was just 18 years old.
Yeah, but what
I would have to go back and look, because I was over in Okinawa when I was 20 years old, and I was able to drink out in town.
Yeah, but what is the blood alcohol level that gets you? Because they said that this Marine had three times the legal limit of alcohol in him.
That I would have to research that. I don't know what the blood legal alcohol limit is out there. But that's also been a problem for a number of years with Marines or sailors getting into trouble, and they put them on a liberty restriction. Now they're talking about, you know, moving the Marines out of Okinawa to Guam and Tinian and Saipan area.
I'm just looking at an article. The U.S. military is dropping a limit for drinking and driving on base to match Japan's ultra-low standard. U.S. Forces Japan said Monday that the move is not related to recent alcohol-related incidents involving service members. Starting on April 3rd, on-base driving limit for blood alcohol concentration will match the 0.03% that applies off-base, U.S. Forces Japan spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Ken Hoffman said in an email. Currently, there are varying policies on base, that range from blood alcohol concentration of 0.03 to 0.05, which creates confusion for service members stationed in Japan. We're setting a standard policy across Japan for all service members will eliminate any confusion. Blood alcohol limits in the United States are typically about 0.08%, allowing people to legally operate a vehicle after consuming a couple of standard size alcoholic beverages. The new policy means that people who are caught with a BAC between 0.03 and 0.079 face a mandatory 60-day suspension of driving privileges, and commanders have the discretion to impose additional penalties. Military drivers who are caught with a BAC at or above 0.08 are subject to action under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So those are that's the standard. Here's the story. The story is a U.S. service member found with a blood alcohol content three times the legal limit. So it would be 0.09 after a fatal accident in Okinawa was arrested on Sunday. Nicholas James McLean, 21-year-old Marine who sustained light injuries, had been earlier questioned by the police on a voluntary basis after his two-ton military truck collided with a mini truck at an intersection in Naha around 5:25 a.m., authorities said. The Japanese driver, a 61-year-old named Kidmasa Tiara, was later confirmed dead at the hospital. Witnesses told police that the military truck had run a red light and hit the mini truck as it was attempting to make a turn. So as a result of that, let me get to the story. One second. The U.S. military has indefinitely barred service members from drinking alcohol after a U.S. Marine fatally struck an Okinawa man in a collision of two vehicles on Sunday in which alcohol may have been a factor, according to a statement. U.S. Forces Japan has also declared all service members restricted to base and to their residences after the crash. A Japanese official told Reuters the 21-year-old Marine had three times the legal level of alcohol in his blood at the time of the crash. U.S. service members in Japan have bred resentment among the local population with DUI convictions and alcohol-related deaths. About half the U.S.'s 50,000 troops in Japan live on Okinawa. There was a quote from General Nicholson. Okay. Any thoughts on that?
Well, one is when you read it originally, I was thinking, okay, Marines go out on their own time. But this Marine went, this 21-year-old Marine, what the heck was he doing drinking and driving a military, was it a 5-ton or 7-ton?
2-ton. What kind of truck is a 2-ton truck? What is that?
I would just think that, I think that's a regular one of those Cut V pickup trucks or a Hummer. So my question is, what the heck is he doing drinking and driving a military vehicle at any time? And at that much alcohol he had. Now, did it say what time of day it was?
05:25 local time.
So that means he must have drank most of the night or into the evening. I don't know how much alcohol dissipates over time once you stop drinking, but he had a lot of alcohol in the system for 5 o'clock in the morning.
The M3939 series is a 5-ton. GMC, I'm just trying to look and see what kind of truck. because the anyway, you know, the other thing is that in the in Okinawa, you see these little vans that people drive, and there's nothing to the cab. I mean, the driver sits really far forward in the cab. You know, the engine may, and there's no protection for the driver. You know, in a lot of vehicles, the engine and the compartment of the passengers are, you know, that engine compartment is part of the way the car crumples and part of the protection of the passenger. And
no, that's clearly the vehicles they have. Well, I was going to say that the vehicles they have in Japan are not the same vehicles that come out that are over here in the United States, even though they're made by probably the same company. They don't have the same safety restrictions that we would have here in the United States.
The here's another question. Pretty amazing to me, given the constant lectures that service members get on Okinawa, that you can completely ignore that kind of stuff. I'm as amazed about this as I am about the incident on Friday with the squadron on Whidbey Island. Maybe we should pull this little stunt prank and nobody's going to really notice it, will they? Well, if somebody does, might they take a picture of it? Might they tweet it out? Nah, that'll never happen. I'm beginning to question the simple intelligence of today's service members. The thought that goes through my head is a Sergeant Major quote. I can fix a lot of things. I can't fix stupid. I will tell you this about the Okinawa event, and Master Guns was touched on it. One of the things that a dispatcher does is he makes sure that somebody is good to go to drive, right? So the drivers all get trip tickets, and they're assigned throughout the weekend to do stuff. There are people that are there on duty and sign those vehicles out. And if those guys, their job is to, if somebody's not able to drive, and to have, to blow a .9, let's just say they said more than three times. So it would be between .09 and .12. What was he when he got in the vehicle? Because they're not going to give him the breathalyzer test till after the crash and then after they get there, blah, blah, blah. What was it at 0430 when he got up and went to work? You know, 0.18? So I don't know. Stupid is stupid. Patrick was telling me a story about a 53 that had an onboard fire in Okinawa. They were up training in the northern training area doing the jungle package up there. And he said, Dad, that thing set down and didn't hurt anybody, didn't do anything. And they were having protests within like 3 hours. There were people at the front gate protesting. So that's the environment that's in Okinawa. And then in the midst of that, it is. It's very much like the Whidbey Island thing. So the Navy, you know, in addition to its collisions, and they release those reports, has another collision over the weekend, right? They have the Whidbey Island thing, and that's on top of two SEALs being accused of murder of a U.S. Army Special Forces soldier that possibly stumbled into them embezzling money. Maybe now might not be the right time for me to show my ass if I'm in the Navy. Maybe not. And I'll tell you what, if you're the SecDef, how much more of this shit do you take before you fire the CNO and say, hey, look, you need to get this shit together now. I'm not having this. And don't tell me we're working on it. I want you to get out, and I want to see you chewing some ass like that Air Force dude did. If you can't uphold our standards, get out now. So, I don't know.
But see, that's what needs to happen. And it just, I mean, we talked about this the last time I was on your show. Is where's the leadership in all this stuff? And that's, I mean, there's more and more incidences of this. And you're going to be a time General Mattis is going to call the Chief of Naval Operations. Either if you can't handle it, I'll get someone who can. Because they just fired the admiral in charge of the 7th Fleet?
Right.
He had numerous this. Hey, we don't have your confidence. You need to go.
Hello.
Get someone who can get the thing done.
You know, so I give my speech on Friday, and one of the things I talked about was discipline. You know, you've learned some stuff in the Marine Corps, and you have to embrace it. Okay, you have to embrace it. One of it is the discipline. You can't be successful in life without being a disciplined human being. Anybody who would tell you otherwise is blowing smoke up your ass. Okay? And I won't do that. Embrace the discipline of the Marine Corps. It will make you successful. And then on top of that, I said my little piece about fighting, right? People want you to do the wrong thing, fight them. And then I played some audio from the Commandant's interview with me. And he said, look, you want me to do the wrong thing? I'll fight you. You want to fight right now? Let's go. I'll fight. And so I play that, right? and so then after I said, look, that's the Commandant of the Marine Corps. It's okay to fight. Fight for what's right. Fight to keep your honor clean because you have to live with it. And so afterwards, who do you think of all the groups that came up to talk to me about discipline and fighting for it, who do you think was, what group was most represented in that?
I would say the junior Marines.
No. Staff Sergeant Gunning.
Okay, I can see that.
How frustrated they are with their peers that they get looked on when they enforce discipline, that they get looked on like with the eye roll and like, we're going to do this stupid shit now. And both of them, two of them walked up at the same time, and they shook my hand. They're like, hey, sir, that was awesome. And I said, thanks. And they said, no. You know, we have guys who need to hear that. You know, especially we staff NCOs, we're the backbone of this thing. We are that discipline. And if we don't do it, if we don't bring it, if that's not what we're contributing, then it doesn't exist. And I said, hey, man, you're preaching the gospel. Don't back off that. And they said it's just so frustrating because there's a lot of guys who don't like to enforce discipline. And they said, you know, this is a good unit, so it's a lot better in this unit than others I've been in. You know, but still, it's a daily fight to teach. And, you know, and then they make the point in an aviation unit, you know, as a grunt, you know, you guys might go to the range every couple weeks or once a month, and then it's on and it's deadly. For us, every day that those aircraft go in the air, it's deadly. So we don't, there's not a switch for us, combat, non-combat. You know, the only difference in combat is we might load more ordnance. But for us, single mentality of attention to detail, thoroughness, and discipline. And that has to be the way it goes. So pretty interesting discussion.
No, it is. I mean, there was a time when General Amos, when he was a commandant, mentioned that he wanted, you know, the NCOs to stand and lead. And I wrote an article for Marine Gazette, didn't get published, but my crux of it is, how do you expect the corporals to stand and lead if your staff NCOs and officers aren't teaching them? And just like what those staff and staff NCOs and gunnies were saying is, my peers aren't doing that. I do one thing and they look at me, okay, they criticize it, oh, here we got to do this stupid thing. No, they're not enforcing the discipline that needs to be in those units. And that prevents a lot of these problems.
Right.
You can't be buddies. I learned that long time ago, and I was told you can't be buddies with your Marines. You've got to be set the standard. You're the ones that lead. You've got to stand and lead.
Do you think that we've taken away a lot of their do they have enough room to lead?
That could be a – that's sometimes yes and no. I mean, I've been in units where some of the officers are down into the area that is the purview of staff NCOs, and they need to understand they have a role. Like when I was a member up at MHG, you were always at a role where you were at, and I was at the role I was at. I mean, you commanded it, but we kind of controlled what was going on. You never stepped into that area that was my purview.
Yeah, I always told them, hey, you better get your shit out there and you better get it done or I will have your ass, you baldy.
And you did that. And you did that once when we were in a meeting with MHG commander, and if there's something wrong with the slide deck, and you friggin' just, you look straight at me and okay, make sure you unscrew this and tell me what something's going on or can't get it done. So I've been there.
Well, you know, again, shit rolls downhill, right?
It does.
Do you want me to?
You go right to the source.
Do you want me to do it? And that's holding people accountable. But I don't. Have we eroded their authority, the way they're able to do their jobs, to the point where they've shied away from doing it, right?
If those Marines came up to you, then I guess the Marine Corps has shied away. If you want to get back to the Marine Corps that had discipline, you got to empower those staff NCOs, and then they empower their gunnies. I was at a rifle range, and we had to get up at a certain time, and the sergeants and corporals and some of the staff NCOs were taking the time. We didn't get out on time, and finally I lit into them. I go, listen, it's not the purview of the command. Our lieutenant colonel was there. If he's screaming, so we're doing something wrong.
Right.
If we're supposed to be up at in formation at 05, that means you get your Marines up earlier than that and make sure they're ready. And staff NCOs, you dictate the NCOs to do their job, and they tell their Marines to do stuff. That's how it works.
All right, we're gonna take about a 4 minute break. When we come back, I want to talk some more current events. Again, you can fix a lot of things. The incident on Whidbey Island is straight up stupid. It's juvenile, and it comes at a time that really only reinforces the negative opinion and the low opinion that people have of the Navy right now, and the Navy doesn't need it. But I guess you can't, that's stupid. The thing in Okinawa is a leadership failure. You know, I don't know how, as Master Gunn said, how that guy gets into a vehicle with, pretty close to 0.1 blood alcohol content and doesn't smell of it and the dispatcher doesn't notice it. That's an investigation in which somebody's head's going to roll. So anyway, we'll take a break. More on a Monday. Talking current events of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, and that is the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
J. Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Be 8:20 on Monday, Thanksgiving Monday. Slowing it down for all you couples out there.
Like waves on the coast.
Blake Shelton.
You move in close. I don't want you to stop. I don't want you to stop tonight.
We're talking current events this morning, and John Ubaldi, retired Marine Corps Master Gunner Sergeant, joins me. Hey, Master Guns, what do you, first of all, your favorite part of Thanksgiving? And you grew up in an Italian family. Did you guys embrace American Thanksgiving, or did you guys?
We had turkey, but the traditional. But then my mom used to take those big stainless steel mixing bowls,
yeah,
the jumbo ones, and make just a ton of pasta. That's what I miss about Thanksgiving.
The pasta?
That's what I love about it. Love pasta.
Okay, so what kind of pasta would you make?
It all depends. What you, at that time, it would have been just the rigatoni. It could be, what do you call it, like spaghetti-type stuff. Just all different types of pasta. And then for my dad, he was a big, he liked to, that was his time to have his red wine for dinner and everything. Of course, he could never understand when he had a son that was Mormon and didn't drink wine, so that was another thing.
You don't hear the Italian name in the Mormon rolls very often.
No, you don't. And for my dad, he never understood me. He's like, I don't get you. Where do you spawn from? You're Italian, full-blooded, you're Mormon, you're conservative, and you don't drink. Where do you spawn from? And then when I made the kiss of death, I told him, you know, Dad, I'm not a big fan of Frank Sinatra. And it's like, where did you grow up at?
Wait a minute. Are you Mormon? Are you the Mormon?
Yep. I'm 100% a Mormon, yep.
How did you become a Mormon as an Italian Catholic?
That's what my dad was. That's the same question my dad asked. It just came across it, and it just fit me, and poof, into the church I went. The Marine Corps loved it.
Oh,
because when it came time for, when every time everybody went out to the club, they realized, oh, wait a minute, Ubaldi doesn't drink. And I got all these keys thrown at me. You're the designated driver. We'll feed you, but you can drive everybody home.
Yeah, we don't. It tends not to be the way of the Marine Corps, which is interesting. All right, Charles Manson died. Before we talk about DOD stuff,
it's for him. He should have been put to death years ago, but right. Because of California law at that time, it was just strange how he was sentenced to death with all the other associates of them, and then all of a sudden, because they commuted the death penalty as unconstitutional, I think it was 73,
they
got life in prison without parole. Then they had the ability to get parole. Now, most of them will never get out, right. But they have that option.
Right.
So, yeah. Good for America, good for the taxpayers. They don't have to pay for this guy anymore.
Yeah, just a terrible event. And
oh my God.
You know, the Tate LaBianca murders, and then. And really, the case was notorious enough, you know, for you know, the stuff they wrote on the walls in blood, Helter Skelter, that gets linked to the Beatles song, yada yada yada, and then the prosecutor, Vincent Bugliosi, writes, I can't remember the title of his book, but his book became a bestseller. And it was about inside the grisly acts surrounding the Manson cult, and then the Tate LaBianca murders, and then he only got crazier, you know. He goes to prison, and then he carves a swastika.
But then also the media kept bringing him out. They should have just. Let him just rot wherever cell he was in. Don't give him the notoriety, and they did.
You don't understand the media, my friend.
Yeah, it's just that's the media.
The media gets paid by people that view and selling stuff, and we all know this, that sex sells. So let's see. We can do a story on, you know, on pension fraud and underfunded pensions in the country, or we could do a story about Charlie Manson.
Yeah, you're right. They're going to go to that one.
What are we going to do? It's the nature of the beast. Big story over the weekend was the fall of Zimbabwe's president. Robert Mugabe. And the short-term analysis is that's a good deal for the Chinese, that the people behind his overthrow are friendly to the Chinese, and it won't be good for the United States. So,
well, but see, China has been, not just for the fall of Mugabe down in Zimbabwe, they've been pushing a lot of resources into China to extract resources back to China.
Right.
So, and then this goes back to President, I'm not sure what Trump's strategy so far is to Africa, but it's funny that when it comes to foreign policy, President Bush gets criticized, but he had one of the better Africa policies, and they love him down in Africa. And President Obama, who was supposedly hailed from Kenya with African roots, they really do not like him down there because he really didn't do anything for Africa.
No, I mean, President Bush with his AIDS initiative and all that, I mean, he was a big deal there.
Well, he got the medicine and the health care with AIDS and malaria right to the people and kind of pushed back on the government where the corruption was at. But then President Obama comes in, and you remember in, was it 2014, Boko Haram kidnaps all those girls, and Michelle Obama puts a tweet out, save our girls, but they're still kidnapped even to this day.
Right.
Some have been released, some have escaped, some have been rescued, but there's a disaster going out through the great parts of Africa. So what is happening?
Yeah, I guess we'll wait. I guess we'll all wait and watch and see what happens as Zimbabwe goes its way.
Yeah, it is. We just have to just wait and see what we do.
All right. Next question involves an article that started percolating last week. And it's an amazing article. And here's the headline in Defense News. Stratcom head would push back on illegal nuclear launch order. So there's this narrative that's getting painted of Trump attempting to start a nuclear war and that the military will save the country. And it's being mostly fostered, I think, by liberal media people. But they... But this is the first paragraph, first two paragraphs of the story. Dateline is Halifax, Canada. The head of the U.S. Strategic Command on Saturday said he would refuse to execute an order from President Donald Trump to launch a nuclear weapon if he believed its use was illegal. General John Hetton, who oversees the operation of nuclear weapons, told participants at a Halifax International Security Forum that he and Trump have already had discussions about the nuclear decision-making process. Hayton would likely be the final person that Trump would talk to should the president decide to move forward with a nuclear strike. I think some people think we're stupid, but we're not stupid people. We think about these things a lot. The way the process works is simple. I provide advice to the president. He'll tell me what to do, and if it's illegal, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to say, Mr. President, that's illegal. And guess what he's going to do? He's going to say, what would be legal? And we'll come up with the options of a mix of capabilities to respond to whatever the situation is. One of the biggest questions raised by Hayton's fellow panelists was how the United States and Trump specifically would respond to North Korea escalating nuclear test and development activities. However, there were no easy answers. You know, this story, and I think the general, I think he doesn't paint the appropriate context for it. And the appropriate context is this. Anybody in the United States military is not bound to follow an unlawful order. Okay, so I would give you that is a general answer. Beyond that, you know, and that's been the case in the United States military forever. So,
but I think there's one other thing, because I was asked this question at the tail end of a radio show I did on Wednesday. Everybody assumes that President Trump can just open a briefcase and bam, he points the button and nuclear missiles go off. There's a whole procedure that has been decades in the making, all the way going back when Harry Truman dropped the first atomic bomb on Japan. The president can't just unilaterally push a button and poof, nuclear weapons go off. And I agree with you. I think the general didn't put it in the right context or explain how the process works. The president doesn't see anything differently that the STRATCOM commander sees or the Secretary of Defense sees. And I think people need to understand that. You hate Trump, I got it. But don't be delusional to think that President Trump is just going to unilaterally launch something.
Yeah, but you know what? They don't even care about that. All they want to do is continue. They want to paint the case that, or they want to make the case that he's unstable. He needs to be stopped. And you know, and it's kind of like what's that movie? What's the movie about nuclear war?
Is that the one with 1964 or something?
Slim Pickens, George C. Scott. What is it? Failsafe?
Yeah, there was another one.
I think it's called
Failsafe. There was another one with Kurt Douglas and Burt Lancaster.
I think it's the same movie. I think they're all
in
it. Yeah, it's all those. It's black and white. All those big timers. Yeah. And at one point, Slim Pickens, like, is on the nuclear weapon as it's dropped from the aircraft, and he's waving his cowboy hat and stuff like that. Right, that's
the movie. But the point that I also want to bring up, I think it's morally fostered of those who dislike Donald Trump, and we've spoken about some of the things Donald Trump has done, but where were the same individuals when Bill Clinton was president? I think there was a report that he even lost the nuclear codes, and they had to real shuffle and get that reestablished again. I mean, you're focusing on one aspect, and this means they just don't understand how the systems work or care to understand. And they're pushing a narrative out that one person can unilaterally start nuclear war. That's not how our system is set up. And it was designed that way so one person could not do that.
Yeah, it's just playing the media game that gets played every single day in the country. And so, I know it is what it is, but that I think that he should have been, my own opinion, the way he answered that, it would have been more appropriate for him to say, first of all, for those of you who that are interested in this story in some way, shape, or form, to detract from the President of the United States, I have nothing to say to you. All right, for me, this is business. If you're asking a question about lawful and unlawful orders, there's been plenty of written. No officer, no enlisted member of the United States military has to obey an unlawful order. Period. I don't have anything else to say to that. For those of you who would characterize that in some kind of political way, relative to the president, I'm not interested in that discussion. You know, and so I don't know. To me, you know, it seems like he's being made use of. He's been made use of by people that have a very, very, very specific agenda. Are you surprised at this? Here's like the four story in the early bird. Despite offering fat retention bonuses to entice pilots to stay in the Air Force, the percentage of eligible pilots is plummeting. The Air Force says it typically hopes to retain about 65% of the eligible pilots. But in 2015, only 55% took the bonuses and signed up for longer stints. The so-called take rate has plunged even further since then to 48% in 2016 and about 44% in 2017, according to figures released by the Air Force.
That doesn't surprise me because I talked to a couple pilots in the industry now. There's such a shortage of pilots, I guess, through them leaving or also they're retiring. So the airlines can offer much higher pay than the military even after the bonuses can without having to deploy and all that other stuff. So that doesn't surprise me.
Here's, listen to this. Okay. So you've heard about bonuses, right? Listen to this.
Correct.
In June of 2017, the Air Force for the first time began offering retention bonuses of up to $455,000 to fighter pilots who agree to extend their service 13 more years at $35,000 per year. until then, the most a fighter pilot could get was a retention bonus of $225,000 or $25,000 per year for a 9-year extension.
Yeah, that's going to keep pilots.
But the problem is, evidently, airlines need pilots too, given the rate. Well, they do. Given the rate of retirement of the baby boomers, they're trying to keep up, and they're aggressively, I guess, seeking out pilots. And because of the airframe issues, you have pilots that aren't getting enough flight hours in the military, and who are more than willing to go become civilians, so at least they can fly.
And that's the case that you're having.
Interesting. Interesting. Next story in the early bird. And then I have a Marine story and an email. Chinese send bombers and intelligence gathering planes through international airspace near Okinawa. China on Sunday again sent bombers and intelligence gathering aircraft through international airspace between the islands of Okinawa and Mikado in the East China Sea, part of what China has called continued regular exercises in the area. Japan scrambled fighters in response, though no violation of Japanese airspace was detected. Master Vince, could you explain to everybody that this stuff goes on all the time and how it works?
Well, no, it does. We do it, they do it, but there's also one other thing they haven't mentioned. I can't remember the name of the island. There's an island up in that area that has been hotly contested by both Japan and China. So China is either reinforcing that to say this is sovereignty, just like they're doing in the South China Sea. So this is on top of what they normally do.
You know, the I can't remember the I should know that because I have a guest that comes on, Grant Newsham, who comes on and talks about it. But the only thing what the Japanese are most nervous about is that the United States is going to somehow or other allow the Chinese more sway in the East China Sea in return for favors relative to North Korea. And that China is not going to help us without getting something in return. So the only question is, what is that going to be?
That's what we don't know. But this goes back even before Trump. They saw that the United States was on retrenching back because they allowed China to push into the South China Sea, and you're right. People are nervous. They see China on the rise, and they're questioning the U.S. And going back to what we earlier discussed about all the shipping accidents where our naval forces crashing into merchant ships. So this reinforces, is the United States going to stick around? And what deal is, because, Trump says he's the art of the deal. What is he going to do with China? What is he going to give China?
So the Japanese are terrified that they're going to be, that interest is going to be part of the deal. So it's pretty interesting to watch that dance. The I would say this relative to, I'm not excusing our behavior on Okinawa, but you know what? When somebody else is defending your country and you don't have a standing army, sometimes this stuff happens. You know, you've written the Japanese Constitution has been written that says we don't have, a large military. We have a self-defense force. Okay, well, who defends you then? And the answer is the United States does. You're under our nuclear umbrella. Right, you're under our strategic umbrella, and so the cost of that is having people stationed there, and sometimes they do stupid stuff. If not, stand your own army back up. Put a million men under arms. Go ahead and pay for it. House them. Do it all, and be a strong ally. But again, no American wouldn't apologize to the Japanese people. for what happened. But you know what? If you do the macro analysis, if you do the macro analysis in terms of a million men under arms, more than a million when you count reserves, the ships that have to be built, the tanks and all the military hardware that's got to be purchased, we can do that, or we can allow the Americans to do it. And if the Americans do it, then we'll have to live with, you know, the stupid things that are going to happen when young Americans come here. That's a Japanese decision that they've made. And so, okay, I get it that the people are upset, but at some point the Japanese government, as it tends to do, either ignores them or, you know, or pacifies them in some way, shape, or form. But it's you know, if you want us out, then, you know, it is certainly going to cost you something. And
But this is the same discussion that was happening, I know, during the campaign, because Trump made some comments that everybody's got to pay their fair share. But he wasn't the first person that said that. Robert Gates, when he was Secretary of Defense under both Bush and Obama, told, hey, Europe, you got to cough up some of the defense things yourself. There's only like three or four countries that are paying more than, I think, 2% of their GDP to defense.
No, they weren't even paying the 2%, right? Because that's the NATO requirement, is 2%
of the NATO requirement.
Is GDP, and they weren't even close to it.
There was only three countries that were doing that.
By all accounts, so Gates was a respected guy. What changed? Why are they now, most of them, on track to pay it now, and they went before?
I think it's because they're unsure of, was Donald Trump meaning what he said? It's like, hey, if you're not going to do it, don't expect us to do all the work for you. And maybe that's in a lightning rod, that this person was finally different. We finally got a president who's now looking after America, and not, he said that at the United Nations. I'm going to look after what's best for America, and you should look after what's best for your country, and that's what we expected.
Interesting.
So it just changed the dynamic.
Right. Well, and again, I think the guy standing behind them is different. Trump is a different guy than we've seen inhabit that White House. He calls people out. I mean, he did over the weekend when that the basketball player's dad said, who? The president didn't have anything to do with it. And then, you know, and again, sounding is about as unprofessional as you can. The president says, I should have just let him rot in jail. Come on. I mean, really? Do you have to squat to that idiot's level? And he doesn't leave any of it that gets thrown his way, not thrown back.
Well, he just plays that New York image, and if you criticize him, and I think he relishes in that stuff. If people criticize him, he loves it.
I do too. I think he loves. I agree with you.
I think it's like it's like spinach to him. Oh, this is great.
And you know what? I think he'd look at us and say, you know, Paul. You know, you've heard him say it before. Politics is a rough business, and most people are way too squeamish for it. If you want to play that game in public, I'll play it with you.
The last thing. I mean, the one thing that's going to be interesting, I mean, that was big last week, kind of tailed off, is when Jeff Sessions was up in front of Capitol Hill on the House Judiciary Committee, and he kind of floated the idea that there may be a second special counsel looking into some of the investigations of the Clinton email, Uranium One, the Russian dossier. So if they just go after him, he's not going to play that game.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
And it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. Because that was the latest article. I just submitted it to my editor today. Is will the Justice Department or Attorney General issue another second special counsel? And I laid out a lot of the different questions that we just don't know. Or what we thought we knew and we found out something different. So we'll have to see how this plays out. And then at the end of this month, the FBI is supposedly turning over documents that showed, first they denied it, that they didn't have it, then they were caught when it was embedded in another investigation that they had like 50 documents that showed regarding the Clinton, Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch meeting at Tarmac in Phoenix. So it would be interesting to see what's on those documents, and that will be released by the 30th of November.
Here's an email. Here's the email I wanted. Mac, what do you make of the USS Benfield running into a tug? I know the Navy's still investigating. Does that break Squelch, or is that something that is on the tug and probably nothing that the Benfield could do? What do you think, Master Guns?
Well, that goes back to what we early thought with the other two incidents, the McCain and with the Fitzgerald. So we'll have to see how the report comes out. But that's just another issue regarding Navy crashing into tugs and commercial vessels. I mean, the listeners need to understand there's so many allowances for this. It's like, how do you get into an accident? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, my thought relative to this is tugs operate in proximity, in close proximity to vessels as they move them around, you know, trying to get them into ports and different moorings places as they come and go. So my understanding from the limited information I saw was that the tug had lost its propulsion. So it might be that it was operating in proximity and then it loses its own propulsion system, which means it's floating and, you know, it's subject to the current. That may have been the reason, and in proximity there was nothing that the Navy vessel could do. So I think, you know, being fair and not Navy bashing I think you give the benefit of the doubt to the vessel that was under command, and knowing that tugs, if it was a different ship, I would say, yeah, the Benfield is culpable. But tugs are different. Tugs operate very close to you, and if one of them loses control in proximity to you, there's not enough space for you to do anything.
No, and that's a fair assessment. We've been on ships before where tugs were all over the place, and if something happened to that tug, there's really not much you can do.
Right. So I think, yeah, not enough information to do that. So withhold judgment and be an adult, because we need more adults in the world right now. Couple of Marine headlines. President Trump's lawyer comes to defense of Marines who peed on Taliban corpses. Now, if you're familiar with John Dowd, he's been a guest on this show on multiple occasions. Okay, he is now one of the president's attorneys. John M. Dowd, who has represented the president since June, confirmed to Marine Corps Times on Friday that he filed a petition to clear the records of the scout snipers involved in the urination case after an appeals court ruled that the then Commandant, General James Amis, had illegally interfered in the legal proceeding. The Navy Marine Corps Court of Appeals dismissed charges against Staff Sergeant Joseph W. Chamblin on November 8th, because Amis told the first general officer in charge of investigating the case that he wanted the Marines involved crushed and discharged from the Marine Corps. None of this information was provided to Chamblin or his defense counsel before he pled guilty to urinating on the Taliban corpses. It's probably the most powerful finding of unlawful command influence I've ever read, Dowd said. Dowd argues that the scout snipers involved would not have pleaded guilty had it not been for Amos's unlawful command influence and obstruction of justice. That's more than enough to clear the records of these five Marines, he said. Right now, Dowd said, he is waiting to see if the government will appeal the Chamblin ruling before determining when to file a petition on behalf of the seven other Marines who were disciplined after a video of the scout snipers urinating on the Taliban corpses appeared online in 2012.
Well, also, that's, I think General Amos was really slapped when he pulled the convening authority from, was it General Waldhauser? Because General Waldhauser was just going to go by the facts and the merits of what the law dictated.
Right.
And he got that pulled, and it was adjudicated by another commanding general. And I'm not sure who the other convening authority was.
Yeah, by a second. And Amos's defense was he knew he had placed undue, he admitted unduly his comments were inappropriate, and that the only way that he could start the process over cleanly is by reappointing somebody. People who Amos's detractors said, no, he wanted to get somebody else in there that would do what he wanted, and because of Waldhauser's pushback, he replaced Waldhauser. So depends on who you believe. There's an interesting article in Marine Times about that investigation, which was recently released, and interesting stuff. The and again, it's not to say that these Marines are innocent of what they did. They're not innocent. The question is, in our judicial system, if they can't get a fair trial, then they can't be found guilty.
And that's probably the best assessment right there.
Right.
If they weren't going to get a fair trial, well, our whole judicial system is, we're not saying that they're innocent or guilty, but let's let the process and the legal system carry forward, not have undue command influence to say you're now guilty. That's not the way our system of government operates.
Right. And again, just like in civilian courts, if the system is tarnished, then the result is thrown out.
And that, to me, I know it's not, I know I diverge on this one, but that to me is the whole crux of the whole Russia investigation email scandal. And I mentioned this. Did the Justice Department and the FBI, did they collude and did they do the bidding of a political party and a political candidate to illegally get a warrant to go after Donald Trump and his campaign staff? If that's the case, then we've got some serious constitutional problems here.
What's the constitutional problem? To me, it sounds like you have a serious problem.
Well, the Constitution,
relative to maturity.
The constitutional problem that I see is the dossier, which was the center of the whole special counsel by Robert Mueller into Donald Trump and and colluding with the Russians in the presidential campaign. We now know that Fusion GPS was paid by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign on that dossier that was put together by a foreign intelligence operative, Christopher Steele, who got information from Russian intelligence operators.
Right.
Now, the FBI was paid for that dossier back in 2016. James Comey, when he was then FBI director, said this was a scandalous, there was no basis for this, but he used that to brief President-elect Donald Trump and, President Obama. Well, then they took that dossier, which we don't know, and this is what we need to know. Did you use that dossier to go to the FISA court, which was an unverified, unsubstantiated piece of evidence, presented to a judge to get a warrant to go after and conduct surveillance off of Donald Trump and his campaign staff? So you had a dossier that was paid for by one party and one political candidate to go after another party and another political candidate. So you're illegally obtaining a warrant that was never should have gotten through the system because it was never verified. That's the constitutional problem we have. And that's what I've never heard an answer to. Did the FBI use that dossier to get a warrant?
I don't know that's as much a constitutional problem as it is idiots in charge and doing things for political reasons. Now, that's a big charge against Comey, but it's not it's not a constitutional issue. It's the people that are supposed to support and defend the Constitution that are doing things that aren't right.
Well, the reason I say it's a constitutional issue because you have the Justice Department, the top law enforcement in the country, the most renowned law enforcement agent in the world, taking information from a third party, paying for that.
Right.
That was also paid for by a political party to target your opponent.
Yeah, but none of that's constitutional.
But the constitutional part is this.
What?
If law enforcement is allowed to lose evidence that has never been substantiated, never been verified, and go into a federal judge, here's my evidence. Okay, here's your warrant. That's using illegal evidence to obtain a warrant. If law enforcement is allowed to skirt the Constitution, what faith do we have in the law enforcement community of the United States if that's allowed to stand? Doesn't matter if you agree with Donald Trump or not.
Okay, so where's the constitutional part? I see misconduct. I don't see the constitutional issue.
Well, that's the Constitution because they violated the Fourth Amendment. You presented evidence saying that this was legitimate evidence to get a warrant, which it was illegal evidence. It was never substantiated.
And it clearly wasn't.
And it clearly wasn't. And now they got a warrant, so did they use that? And that's what we need to find out.
Okay. I got a couple more headlines I want you to comment on, and then I'll let you go. The Pentagon is weighing a policy change that would limit certain service members from transferring their education benefits to dependents, a DOD official said, which is one of the most popular I transferred mine, and, 4 years of college for my kids paid for, and they got a living stipend. It's an awesome deal. Anthony Curtis said the Department of Defense intends to issue a policy change to the post 9/11 GI Bill prohibiting service members with 16 or more years in uniform from transferring the benefits to their dependents. Currently, GI Bill allows service members with at least 6 years of service to transfer their benefits to a dependent, provided they agree to serve four more. This change reflects an emphasis on retention consistent with the original congressional intent, wrote Curta, President Trump's nominee for Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel Readiness. I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But the other thing I would say is when you transfer it to your children, you deployed numerous times and your children were affected by your deployment. Because your children were, one of your daughters, I think that you brought her to the Marine Corps ball for MHG in 2012, so she was in like a middle school.
Yeah, Colleen.
So many times you deployed while she stayed back.
Right.
And she didn't have her father there for those 90 years or time that you were deployed. So why shouldn't she benefit? And this benefits the United States because now we have an educated person coming out who's going to get a good job and economic benefits that way.
Well, okay, so let me get my secret decoder ring. The Department of Defense intends to issue a policy change to the post 9/11 GI Bill, which would prohibit service members with 16 or more years in uniform from transferring the benefit to their dependent. So what that means is if you have between 6 and 16 years, you can transfer it. Once you get beyond 16 years, they don't need to retain you anymore. Okay, so that incentive is not going to be used. I'll be curious to hear what the services have to say about this. But the bottom line is what that means is during the course of your service, you should get a number of emails telling you you're going to lose the ability to do this if you don't do it now. But it's a great benefit. Former Secretary of the Navy James Webb was one of the guys who pushed it, and it's a full college education with living expenses for a kid,
there's somebody you should have come on your show.
Who?
If you can get James Webb on your show, you can maybe go into that.
You know what? I'm trying. He's not the easiest guest to book, but I'm a patient man, and so some of these people, I'll tell you, the hardest people to get to come on, senior enlisted guys. They don't.
Really?
Yeah, they don't like the media. The only thing that's going to happen, I'm going to get in trouble. Okay, listen to the interviews and then tell me how you're going to get in trouble. It's going to be you and me talking about Marine Corps stuff. So, anyway. All right, Master Guns, first of all, I appreciate your time this morning. Happy Thanksgiving if I don't talk to you.
Yeah, have a good Thanksgiving and enjoy your time with your family.
Where are you going? What are you doing?
I'm going to be hanging out with some friends out here in Tampa. Enjoying the beautiful weather. It's about in the upper 70s, low 80s.
Nice. Nice. All right, sir. Have a good one. Thank you.
All right, you have a good holiday.
Happy Thanksgiving. That is John Ubaldi, pasta with turkey. That's the way the Italians do it. Mike Musselman joins us next.